the TE make a statement.
Remember,
assessment.
The time
Mr. Chair,
Representative Forsett.
I want to serve notice of a minority report on 3240.
Representative Morissette has served a notice of a minority report on House Bill 3240.
Ms. Hobson is going with
you. Representative Hobson, you want to chime in?
We'll do it.
Hey.
Okay.
A political term. Chime in.
Join
It's a scientific term.
Do you hear what I said?
Are there any more of our members out there? Any more of our members out there?
You remind me of today.
Okay. Wilson. Okay. We are going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2471. Let's see. Correction. We're going to open a work session on House Bill 2471. Because it wasn't scheduled as a hearing. Correct. Representative Cruz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Representative Jeff Cruz, House District 45. House Bill 2471 is a minor little tweak. In the spirit of the fact that I never bring controversial legislation, I'm glad that you agreed to hear this.
You're in the right place.
I've heard all about your committee. This is the first time I've been here. It's lovely. House Bill 2471 basically is a very simple bill. It abolishes the Office of Chancellor of Higher Education and transfers the duties and functions of that office to the Board of Higher Education and allocates staff to that board to perform the functions of the Board of Higher Education. What brought me on to this was conversations with former Representative Tom Bryan 2 years ago when we were here, and his frustration from 2 years previous when they were trying to get some resolution to the conflicts between, I think it was Portland State and Oregon State as far as engineering programs. And the Office of Chancellor, their solution to the problem was to add more staff to coordinate. And to me, and I looked into it, and it seems like we have a heck of a lot of bureaucracy, and I'm wondering why. The Chancellor's Office has a budget of around $27 million biennium, staff of around 150 people. And their job is to coordinate activities. Well, that's all well and fine, but the last time I checked with our universities, they all had administrative staff and they all already coordinate activities. So it seems to me that it's an intense amount of duplication of effort. And as we are searching for funds to try to fund higher education, I'm wondering if the $27 million per biennium we're investing couldn't be better spent in other areas in the system rather than just this oversight administrative function. That's basically the bill. I presented this not necessarily expecting everybody to fall in love with it and for it to pass out in current form, but I do think as we move into trying to figure out what our higher ed system looks like, that a discussion about the administrative function is certainly a vital part of that, and a discussion about whether this office and this bureaucracy is the best use of resources by the state of Oregon for the functioning of our higher education system. This is in no way meant to be anything derogatory towards higher ed. I'm fully supportive of it. I would just like to see the funds spent on higher ed spent in the best way possible.
Representative Morissette.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Cruz, you were a little bit misleading in your opening statement saying this is a simple bill to abolish the superintendent of higher education, and that it is not. I didn't think it was simple when you said that, and it's getting more complex. So your recommendation, this bill would, in its present form, abolish that, or are you're talking about, okay, so your latter statement talked about some other compromise action. Are you suggesting that we not pass this bill and that we simply somehow start the discussion?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morissette, if it's the committee's desire to pass this bill, I would be happy to carry it on the floor. Being a realist, I don't think that that's going to happen. Oftentimes in the political process, we present ideas that need a good period of time for the fullness of discussion, and which was why I brought this bill forward. I did not bring it forward expecting it to pass. I brought it forward hoping that we would begin a dialogue to see if there was a better way to administer the higher ed system in the state of Oregon.
I really appreciate your comments about oftentimes the bill needs, you know, it introduces an idea. 99% of the bills that I've submitted this session have simply introduced an idea that I hope will come back for later discussion, so I understand what you're saying about that.
Representative Hodgson, did you say you wanted to co-carry the bill? I thought I heard something. Further questions? Representative Morissette?
No further questions. I have an action. I would move to table.
We're not in work session. Pardon?
No, we're not in work session.
We are.
I appreciate the suggestion that we examine this, and I think that's a good idea, but I think an appropriate action right now would be to either not take any action or to table the bill for further discussion, and I think it's worth having a further discussion.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morissette, I would appreciate that. I did not do a vote count on this, so I'm not prepared to say that it meets the constitutional challenge at this point in time.
Okay, we have a motion. Representative Morissette moves to table House Bill, 2471. Discussion on the motion? Clerk will call the roll.
Representative Beckett excused. Representative Close?
Aye.
Representative Hoffman?
No.
Representative Jensen?
No.
Representative Morissette?
Aye.
Representative Starr?
No.
Representative Wilson?
No.
Representative Winters?
Gosh, what are we doing? Kicking him out?
All right. Representative Winters, the motion is to table the bill.
Oh, to table the bill? Oh, no.
Votes no. Motion fails.
Could I change my vote?
Representative Close likes to change her vote. How do you vote?
Nay.
Okay, the motion fails. And we will close the work session on House Bill 471. Okay, we will now go into open the work session on House Bill 3013. Representative Starr, would you like to talk about the amendments you've worked on?
Sure. Could we have the folks that worked on this maybe come to the...
Absolutely. Representative Starr, why don't you come up and then bring whoever you'd like to join you. 3013. I believe we're working at dash 3.
Dash 4. Probably 3 and 4.
So we need both.
I think we need both.
Fours.
You have the fours in the...
The fours will be in the packet. Fours. In the packet.
Mr. Chair, Jim Green also worked on the amendments. In fact, he was one of the prime folks that helped facilitate this act.
I wonder if he's out in the hall out there.
Thank you.
He was moments ago.
I don't know. Maybe I can. I should be here if he comes. I think he could take my spot, and I can go up to my spot on the roster. First of all, I want to thank Jim Green and Wilma Wells from COSTA, and Roger Williams from Ocean Network. We all worked together on this. I believe it's perhaps the first time that a bill has come forward or amendment to the homeschool law has come forward. These folks have all agreed generally to some amendments to the current homeschool law. Jen, thanks for coming. I understand. Mr. Chair, would you object if Tim Green
not at all
spot here and then
not at all.
And
you can come back up to the
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Jim Green representing the Oregon School Boards Association. Is my role to walk you through the dash fours?
It is.
The dash fours, as they're currently written, just having received them before the committee began, my understanding behind the dash fours is that currently homeschooled students, when they withdraw from public school or they're going to begin homeschooling, they notify the education service district, their local education service district. What we're hearing from education service districts around the state is it's costly. We're referring that information to the local school districts anyway, and so what the dash fours do is with regard to notification when you're going to withdraw your student from homeschooling or begin homeschooling, that notification would go to the resident school district as opposed to the ESD. With regard to testing requirements for homeschooled students, currently under the law, homeschooled students are required to be tested annually by October 31 of each year and must report those test scores to the local education service district. What the dash fours do is say, if you withdraw your student from public school, within 18 months of withdrawing that student from public school, you will take a test from a list approved by the State Board of Education, which includes nationally normed tests as well as the statewide assessment that the Department of Education has created. That test will be administered by a neutral third qualified person, and those qualifications are delineated in Department of Education rule. If your student at that time scores at the 20th percentile, as the dash fours read on page 2, line 26, the student would not be required to be tested again. If your student begins homeschooling at the time of kindergarten or grade 1, you would test your student at grade 3, or the equivalent of third grade. And if that student scored at the 20th percentile based on the national norms of those tests, the student wouldn't be required to be tested again unless, and there's a caveat for both of those, the student were to avail him or herself of interscholastic activities of the public school. Then, each year that the student was going to partake in interscholastic activities, that homeschooled student would take a nationally normed test from the list approved by the state board and would be required to score at the 23rd percentile. That, from the testing folks, is about a C level, and that's what's required in public schools right now for most students to participate in interscholastic activities. If you do not score at the 20th percentile on the ones that are either withdrawn or beginning homeschooling, you would be required to be tested each year until you met the 20th percentile. If you met then, you would not be required to take another test. During that time, or even if you do pass the 20th percentile, the homeschool parents and the students may avail themselves of a tutor, a professionally licensed teacher, to come in and help them out. We did not change that from current law. The other thing that's not in the bill, but it's the intent of everyone around the table, and we didn't need to put it in the language, if a student does avail themselves of one or two classes in the public school setting, we do have that now where some of the homeschooled high school students come in and take a couple of classes, biology, some science labs, that they would be required to be tested just as those other students are in the class. They would take the normal homework assignments, the normal testing requirements that may be part of that class. This bill does not try to do away with any of that. What this bill does is to say to ESDs, you're not required to do this anymore. The resident district is truly the one that has authority for these students, and yet still gives some freedom to the homeschool folks that through their 14 years have shown they're doing a very good job. We believe it probably also addresses that small percentage of homeschooled folks who may not be doing what they're supposed to be doing. We understand that the governor's office has some concerns as the Department of Education, and in working with Representative Starr's office, we'd be willing to work on any type of amendments to this bill, but we believe the dash fours adequately address some of the issues and concerns of folks that have been around homeschooling. I believe the governor's office gave a memo with 4 points, I believe, and we addressed three very adequately within the dash four amendments. One is the frequency of testing and what happens if they don't meet the percentile, and I think that's a discussion point with the Department of Education as well as with the governor's office. And in a meeting we had this morning with Representative Starr and a person from the governor's office, this bill is a discussion point to begin that.
Very good. Questions?
Clarification. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Green, so are you saying in the dash fours where it says specifying that if the test for the child is at or above the 20th percentile, there would be no further requirement to test the child? Is that for the year, or is that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Close, that would be if they scored at or above the 20th percentile, they would not be required to be tested again, unless, of course, they availed themselves of the interscholastic activity where there would be an annual test then, or if they took part in a regular public school class, because then they would be tested as those normal public school students are.
Thank you.
And is it, just for clarification, it's correct that that students that are in the traditional public schools have a requirement that they have to meet to be able to participate in interscholastic sports? Or those, so this really approximates that.
Mr. Chair, for the interscholastic activities, again, they have to, the homeschooled students would have to score the 23rd percentile, which from, I'm not a testing person, but what from those folks have said is about AC level, and there is requirements currently in the public school for most public school students that they meet some level of academic achievement, generally AC level, to participate in those interscholastic activities.
Representative Morissette.
Thank you. Mr. Green, I heard you say that within 6 months, when does the first test have to be reported to the district or the ESD?
The first test under the dash fours, if you withdrew your student.
Existing standards.
Existing standards.
Yeah, yeah.
If existing standards require an annual test, and those must be taken by October 31 of each year.
Okay. If a parent starts homeschooling at the beginning of the regular school year, do they have to have a test result by October 1st? They don't. What's the length of time? I have a homeschooling manual in Oregon. I'm looking for it. I thought I saw 8 weeks in here. I see someone nodding their head. But you said something other than 8 weeks.
For what, Mr. Chair, Representative Morissette, for what these amendments would do would change that to say if you withdraw your student from public school, you would test within 18 months of withdrawing. And the concern addressed there was, let's say your student is in the fifth grade, in the fifth grade class in the public schools, and for a variety of reasons, he or she is not at the fifth grade level. If you tested them within 8 weeks, you may not get an accurate reflection of what they may have learned in the 8 weeks they've been homeschooled. The agreement here is that within 18 months of withdrawing, there would be that test. There would be a testing requirement. If they didn't meet the 20th percentile, you would require a test again within a year's time of that first test.
Thank you for the clarification.
Representative, I respond to that.
Absolutely.
Representative Sinceri, Representative Morissette, I'm Wilma Wells from the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators. There's a different aim in these amendments. In the original bill, the requirement was you tested the child right away, and then you tested them at the end of every school year to see that the child was keeping up and that the parent was managing to do the kind of educational job that they ought to do. Well, our experience with testing thus far and the reports to the State Department show that for the most part, parents are doing a very fine job. So we were willing to a compromise on that particular issue.
Okay, thank you.
Any further questions? Some comments tonight?
Chair Sinceri and committee members, I'm Roger Williams. I'm on the Ocean Board Network. Hopefully a little more in control of my emotions this time, because I won't be talking about my son directly. I'd like to emphasize process that we've gone through here. As was mentioned, this is the first time, to my knowledge, that we've had homeschoolers and public schoolers actually sitting down and saying, let's see what we can do to meet each other's needs. I went into the process with basically three goals. One was to, if our kids are scoring high, and we've got that track record in the square here, for those that score high, don't keep on testing them. It's a waste of time. It's an insult to the kid, so forth and so on. And the second one was, as I said in my previous testimony, even the kids on the low end, we are doing a good job with them, as I said about my son. And I did not want my son and others like him to be remanded to school just because he was in the lower achievement area. As I pointed out, my son was at the lower achievement area for a long time, and now he's pulling ahead up to the 43rd percentile, just 6 months behind his peers. So that was my second one. My third one is Representative Morissette and others have raised the issue of the problem that truants can say, I'm homeschooling, and that ties the hands of the truant officer, basically. And I need to tell you, the truants give the homeschoolers a bad name. So my third objective was I want to stay out of the way, and to the extent that homeschoolers can help with that, I want to aid public schools to track those truants. I don't want them out there giving us a bad name. So that was my third objective, and our points that we came up with here, I thought addressed those very well. Addressed both, and then there was also an issue of the ESDs were doing a lot of paper shuffling that they really didn't need to do, and costing them money, so forth and so on. So we wanted to help with that with that too. So that's the intent that we went in here, and I really appreciate the good faith effort that went in on both sides here, trying to meet each other's needs. I need to back up and say one thing. Back in '85 and this year, we introduced bills that basically reflected our philosophical basic stance, and that is that kids are ours; they're not the state's. And I'm not trying to be confrontational here. We can do a better job. Those of us who are motivated to homeschool, we can do a better job with our kids than institutional schools can. And that's our basic position. We haven't changed that. And frankly, we're going to probably be back next year trying to move a little bit closer to that. Just giving you fair warning. But this process, I want to support this process.
Let me just ask a question for clarification. What this bill is asking in terms of testing is not anything different than what the private schools are already doing. Is that correct? The private schools are not bound to some continual testing situation.
Well, that's a higher standard.
This
is a higher standard.
Any further questions?
I have a question.
Representative Winters.
You were talking about certification earlier. Are homeschoolers, are their parents required to be certified?
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, Representative Winters, no, they're not, but there are certifications for the people that administer the test to homeschoolers, and those are laid out in the Oregon Administrative Rules, and they can be a certified teacher, or they can be certified by the test publisher to purchase the test and administer the test, or I believe it's licensed psychologist or psychiatrist as well. So there are certification requirements for the person who administers the test, and that will remain.
But not the instructor.
Administrator has a clarification.
I want to mention a couple of things. This has gone through several rather rapid iterations in the last few days. And one thing I need to mention is that I see that one of the provisions of the Dash 4 amendments is not reflected on your SMS. You might want to take note that in the Dash 4 is one other change that's made, is that rather than reporting of the test results to the ESD, which has always been the way that we've done that, that this would have it that the reporting is to the resident school district. And so it takes the ESD out of the sort of a middle role there. That's one change that we made that I see did not get onto the SMS. The other observation I would make, and if any of you want to correct me on this, I believe that the sequence in which the amendments occurred, the 1, 2, 3, 4 here, the ones are incorporated into at least one of the later amendments, so we don't need to worry about the ones at all. But I believe that the 2s, 3s, and 4s, while in some cases they correct or they change a previous amendment, for example, the 4s are entirely based on the 3s. All the changes in the 4s are changes to the 3s. And that's virtually the case for the transition from the 2s to the 3s also. If you wanted to incorporate all of the provisions of the 2s, 3s, and 4s, I think you'd have to do it by adopting all three and by saying any change in a later amendment from a previous one will take precedence.
If I can clarify that, Mr. Zetter, I believe that the dash 3s were the preliminaries for the dash 4s, so the dash 3s can be discarded. I don't think we need to adopt, because it's the blanks are in the dash 3s that we filled on when we had our meeting. I believe that's the case.
Mr. Chair, if I may clarify as well, in reading the dash 4s contain the 1s, the 2s, and the 3s. What you see in the 2s and 3s are some blanks with regard to the percentile, and that was to be worked out in a work group that met earlier this week. And so the 4s contain all provisions that you would need in order to move this bill.
So the 4s cover everything that we've discussed.
Correct. There is one additional thing.
I understand that the 4s amend the 3s.
No, I believe the dash 4, Mr. Chair, I believe the dash 4s contain everything that is within the 1s, 2s, and 3s and amend the original bill to do what I just explained. There is one other thing that I did fail to mention. On page 3 of the dash 4 amendment, with regard to students who avail themselves of interscholastic activities with the normal public schools, I did say that a test would be administered. There is another process there that's delineated out on lines 26 through 31 and carried on to line 1 of page 4. Basically, that would allow the local school district and the parents to sit down and say, if we don't want the student to take a nationally normed test, here's an alternative process. That requires those two to come together. It doesn't require the district to sit down and do that, not a mandate to either side. But if those two parties can mutually agree that the student shouldn't take a nationally normed test, that there's another way to assess it, they can sit down and come up with that.
Okay. Mr. Chair? I move the dash 4 amendments to House Bill 3013.
Representative Starr moves the dash 4 amendments into 3013. Is there discussion?
Mr. Chair, if I just comment. We worked really hard on this, and I think that what we have here is a really good product. I think that what you have here is what this legislative process is about, and it's about everybody giving a little in order to get something. And I just would thank Wilma and Jim and Roger for their work on this, and I would urge support of these dash 4 amendments. I think it's a really good product.
Appreciate that, and I appreciate the work that the work group has done as well. Representative Morissette.
Well, I do think this was a good process, and I will support the bill. I just want to talk a little bit about my concern with the truancy, and I think that has been addressed and could be addressed in other bills. I do want to also respectfully disagree with the position that was restated that the children are outside the purview of the compelling interest of the state, as I understand it. Now, Representative Starr introduced a bill that addresses parents who withhold their children from medical care because they don't believe in medical practices, and I think the purpose of that bill was to say, yes, the state does have a compelling interest in the welfare of the child. And I respectfully say that, yes, the state does have a compelling interest in the education of the child under this general compelling interest. I like the homeschool results. I'm very much in favor. I have neighbors who homeschool. I have this wonderful book, which now will have to be revised, which is a manual, and some of my friends up there don't know it exists. That surprises me. But so I'm very much in support of what the homeschool people are doing, because you have achieved extraordinarily good results. So I just want you to know that. My concern, though, is how to enter the process and that it not be taken advantage of, and I think that's been met. So, but I did want to point out the difference in, I guess, the premise that we're coming from. So.
Further discussion on the dash fours? Is there objection to the dash fours? And they are adopted. Representative Starr.
Mr. Chair, I'd move the House Bill 3013 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Starr moves House Bill 3013 to the floor with a due pass recommendation as amended by this committee. Discussion. Clerk will call the roll. Clerk will call the roll.
Representative Baker is excused. Representative Close?
Aye.
Representative Hoffman?
Yes.
Representative Jensen?
Excuse.
Aye.
Representative Morissette?
Aye.
Representative Starr?
Aye.
Representative Wilson?
Aye.
Representative Winters?
Aye.
Chair Ciceri?
Votes aye. Motion is passed. Representative Starr, will you carry that bill?
Yes, sir.
Representative Starr will carry that bill. We will close the public hearing on House Bill 3013. And we will open a public hearing on, or correction, we're going to open a work session on House Bill 3480. Dr. Mighton, would you join us? You want to give us a review on this?
This bill requires the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission to conduct a statewide review of professional development procedures, allows the Department of Education and the Department of Higher Education to assist.
Dr. Mike, welcome again.
For the record, I'm David Mike, the Executive Director of the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission. And I thought it would be beneficial for you perhaps to review briefly the situation with continuing professional development as it relates to license renewals. That's the aspect over which we have any control. The statute until 1997 precluded our commission from requiring continuing education for renewal of licenses. In 1997, the legislature adopted Senate Bill 124, which authorized us to create a continuing professional development requirement. And what I have distributed to you today is a little brochure that describes the redesign of teacher preparation. It's the small blue pamphlet that's inside the little pink booklet. And you will see that licensure now has two stages to it. An initial license on completing a pre-service teacher education program, and within 6 years, completing a continuing teaching license based on advanced teacher competencies and a master's degree and 3 years of public school teaching experience. After the person has acquired that continuing license, a continuing education requirement will become necessary. And we have developed the program that's in the small pink booklet that I distributed to you. Also enclosed in that booklet is a form that we're using in field testing the continuing professional development plan that has been developed. During this current school year, we have field tested this plan with 60 school districts and about 500 educators. And we are anticipating the final report on that field test will be presented to our commission at its July meeting. The full implementation of this continuing professional development requirement begins in January 2000 and rolls out over the next 5 years, so that by 2006, all educators will be required to complete 125 clock hours of continuing professional development each 5 years when their licenses are renewed. This is the aspect of the continuing education that was envisioned when the bill was drafted. It appears to us that a full review would be a little premature since the requirement isn't going to be fully effective for another 3 years.
Senator Winters.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So you're saying that probably we should delay 34-8?
Chair, Representative Winters, yes, we were surprised to see the bill when it was first introduced because the continuing education requirement is so new.
Oh.
And it's not about the bill, but it's about the process in... yesterday when I arrived home, my neighbor who lives across the street, who is a teacher, was very upset because at the length of time that it takes to get her approval back from Teacher Standards and Practices. So can you tell me how long does it really take to...
Mr. Chair, Representative Winters, yesterday we were issuing licenses on mail received on April 9th. During the busy time of the year, which is the months of July and August, our processing time is approximately 30 days. We do have an administrative rule that requires us to process applications within 30 days. Our goal, of course, is to have a shorter time than that, and at this time of the year, we're down to about 20 days instead of 30.
That's from the date that you receive the application.
Chair, Representative Winters, that's from the date we receive a complete application. If the application is incomplete when we receive it, then the time would be somewhat longer.
Representative Morissette.
Under, if this passes, all teachers, including those 50% who would be teaching at a charter school, would have to take the continuing education. Is that right?
Chair, Representative Morissette. No, this applies to those individuals who have regular teaching licenses. Basic and standard are the licenses that we issued prior to 1999. Currently, those have now been renamed initial and continuing licenses. The other licenses have renewal requirements built into them, and the continuing professional development requirements that I'm describing does not apply to those.
Any further questions? Thank you. We're going to close the session on House Bill 3480, and we're going to open the work session on House Bill 3307. Let's see, I need to have Wilma and Jim Green. They're probably standing outside the door there. Doctor, do you want to come up as well? Do you want to come up too and just Mr. Green can take the center chair, maybe you can just kind of work yourself in the side there. Let me just share with you what I want you to talk with the committee about this, but my concern is, and certainly correct me, the key is not being taken care of. And for whatever reason, there are a lot of reasons, I'm sympathetic to those. But I also believe that we need to have some kind of physical education and some kind of accountability that's necessary. Now, I appreciate the fact that if we were to make this some kind of a SIM requirement today, that it has an enormous physical impact. And that's not, so it's not going to happen. But I'm interested in discussing elevating the responsibility of the schools for physical education so there is some accountability, so some kind of program gets affected, or even considering phasing in a SIM requirement over a period of 2 years. And so that's, I want to
I want us to try to work this out, and the committee, I think, at least I've sensed, the committee is interested in going in that direction. I surely do not want kids today to end up looking like me, you know, 30 or 40 years. I'm serious about that. You know, I spent 5 years boxing when I was young and played a lot of baseball and was very active and all that sort of thing, and I let that go. And I think if it gets started at a younger age, it's going to be worse sooner. And so I'm sincere when I say that I think we need to address this. So let me just throw it open to all the important people you know about this.
Well, thank you very much, dear Sincerians. For the record, I'm Wilma Wells with Confederation of Oregon School Administrators. I'm not sure that I can agree with you completely that EE has gone down the tube. I'm not sure that I can agree with you very much about your notion that everybody shouldn't look like you do, because we all have to realize that part of the way we look has to do with who we happen to choose for parents. In relation to PE, we told you we didn't have any objection to there being content standards, and the districts set their own content, how far they would have to go on those standards. Now, that would require some additional funds, I believe, to get the content standards put together. There would then be those particular standards. And as with arts and, what's the other one? Second language, the school districts would set their own standards. I don't necessarily agree. In fact, I absolutely do not agree that you have to have a certificate in PE in order to be a good PE teacher. I'd like to think that I was a doggone good PE teacher, and I taught grades 1 through 6. All you have to have is the ability to get kids involved in some pretty strenuous physical activity at the time that's scheduled for PE. And what you need to know is where you're going. So I believe the content standards will be helpful. At this particular point, I believe I can and certainly do agree with you that and with Representative Cruz, it's worth talking about, it's worth thinking about. At this particular time, it's not financially possible. And I also would point out, I believe that the most important thing right now for us are the academic standards, and then to move from that when we have those under control. And we do not have our assessment for the academic standards completed yet.
Doctor.
Thank you, Chairman Sinceri. For the record, Minot, Cleveland. Cardiologist and runner writer George Sheehan said, "We're all athletes. It's just that some of us are in training and some of us aren't." Okay? Okay?
Well, it makes me feel better.
Yeah. Kind of opens it up for all of us who aren't in training right now. Okay? If you look in the dictionary, there are three distinct definitions of the athlete, and the first two are the ones that we see in the news and watch the Blazers on, people with lots of natural skill and people who train very hard. But there's a third definition that gets neglected and which this bill addresses. And the third definition of the athlete is one who participates or is capable of participating in physical activity, sports, and games. Okay? Who does that leave out? Well, that shouldn't leave out any of us or our kids. Okay? Now, part of the problem is that I grew up in Indiana playing basketball. I played varsity sports despite my first coach said, "See, you're short, but you're slow." And it turned out I was a pretty good little basketball player and loved playing sports, and I was good at it, okay? Unfortunately, sports now, today, they're sort of the tag program for physical activity for our kids. And a small percentage of kids who are able to make the varsity team get the benefits of that, and I fully support competitive sports. However, the vast majority of our kids are not going to be on the varsity basketball team in your school districts. They're not going to go on to college. They're not going on to the NBA. And these are the kids that which is the vast majority of our kids, that we have left out. We have plenty of data to show that, in fact, physical education is not being done well in this state. I have the testing, the last testing that was done in my own district in North Clackamas in 1994. That was the last testing that was done in our district, or as far as I know, in the state. Again, pointing to the issue of lack of accountability. Here's the line for being at grade level, okay? Reading, mathematics, and PE. In our district, which is an excellent school district, the North Clackamas district, 25% of our third graders were below grade level. 25% of our kids were below grade level in a cognitive test on physical education and fitness. Our district was pleased that we were doing a little bit better than the state, which was at 31%. Nearly one in three Oregon children, as of 1994, were below grade level in physical education cognitive testing. There have been cuts in physical education programs since then, and if there was any state testing or even local testing, I'm sure these numbers would be worse. If this were reading or math, we would be appalled, and there'd be a public outcry. Okay? This bill is a way to help those kids that will not be participants on any varsity teams to learn about physical activity and adopt a healthy lifestyle. And I want to assure you that there are no standards now. I'm very familiar with both current 1998 new OARs and the ones in 95 because I went over these with ODE when we raised our complaint in North Clackamas. And what we were told in 95 was that despite this saying, district shall offer a curriculum that leads to the achievement of common curriculum goals, which we felt meant that you have to look at the quality of the program, this was okay. When we ask ODE, does it mean then if 75% of kids were not at grade level, would our district still be standard? They started to squirm a little bit because it gets ridiculous. How can you have 75% of your kids below grade level and still be standard? But the answer was yes. Since 1995, the new 1998 OARs, which was referred to the Wednesday by Mr. Green and others, there's even less clout behind having standards. It just says districts have to do something and do some voluntary testing. There's no accountability. This bill will increase the accountability. We backed out assessment. Standards were for 2001, 2002. Assessment would not be into 2003, 2004. That's 4 or 5 years from now. My profession, medicine, is undergoing enormous changes, and people have to respond to that. It's time. It's too late already. Some kids have left out. This got left out in 95 largely because health was thrown out because of some controversial issues. That was 95, 4 years ago. 97, a bill came up, didn't get out of the Senate Education Committee. It's time. It's overdue. Okay? It's overdue.
Representative Morissette.
I appreciate those comments, and we talked down the hall after your last appearance, and I agree that something does need to be done, but I also am concerned about the cost, and it is a funding. PE, arts, those things have been cut incrementally over the last 10 years, and to reverse that is going to take some work, but I think this is something that we need to do. And so I'm hoping that we can somehow come together and figure out a way of upgrading the present standards, working towards some certification. I'd like to see that as the end result, but I don't know how we get there. Yes.
You got a few brief comments?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Jim Green with the Oregon School Boards Association. I would just like to comment a little bit on what the gentleman to my right said. This bill will not give you accountability with regard to kids that don't meet the standards. You are still going to have students that will not meet the standards under this bill as it's currently written today. They will not get their SIM, and they will not meet that standard. I can guarantee you there are students in our school districts that will not get there. What this bill does is take away local control of school districts. Local school districts now set those standards, and they have to have them. The accountability is at the Department of Education, because if we don't have common curriculum goals and we don't provide it, we're declared non-standard, and they withdraw state school fund dollars. The problem is not at the local school district level, maybe. The problem is with what the State Department is not doing with regard to reviewing what school districts do. Now, if you want to do what the proposed amendments 3307 say, is make it part of the content standards, but don't require it as part of the SIM and part of the assessment to delay those costs, there are still going to be costs associated with that. School districts are expending great dollars, even with the content standards set by the state, in arts and second languages, because they are having to bring their curriculum up to those content standards. They're assessing them locally, but don't fool yourselves. There is still going to be costs associated with this, even just making them part of the content standards. Accountability is there. You have locally elected school board members, and if they don't do it, they're not following the state statute, and then the department needs to step in and declare them non-standard. There's no greater accountability than saying you're a non-standard school district, and we're not going to give you state school fund dollars. That's accountability.
May I respond to that?
Sure.
I would be happy to provide Mr. Green with the documentation from the discussions and the written documentation from the Oregon Department of Education from 1995, when we brought a formal complaint to the Oregon Department of Education that the North Clackamas School District was not meeting the common curriculum goals in physical education. We had plenty of data to support that, and the bottom line from ODE was, it doesn't matter what the testing is. If you do any kind of program, you do any kind of testing, and you report the results to the state, regardless, it doesn't matter what the score of the game was. Just tell us that the Blazers played last night. That's all we need to know. We don't need to know the score because we're not going to do anything about it. Regardless of what the results on the testing was, a district is standard if it has a program, does testing, and reports the results. Now that requirement to even report results to the state is gone. And I would ask you, if there is accountability now, please provide me data for any testing in physical education in districts from 95 to 98. We just met with Bob Stolik Monday, April 24th, 1999. He assured us that there is not any data from districts in the state of Oregon from 1995 to 1998 showing how well or how poorly districts are doing. So it is a smokescreen, and it is inaccurate at best to claim that there is accountability, because there's no way of tracking. There's no data.
Okay, let me just, I think this, what I'll do is, well, Don, do you have just a couple of some comments you'd like to make?
Okay. Well, I just, maybe just a couple of things. First, in 97, when this a similar bill was in the Senate Education Committee, as one of the opponents to the bill, the superintendent of the Westland Wilsonville School District, Dr. Roger Will, he mentioned in his testimony, again, this is in opposition, he says physical education does not adequately fit the category of a content area. He said, current state requirements for offering physical education K-12 are subject to a wide range of interpretations. Those OERs are nonspecific, and therefore the range of PE offering is from very, very little in some districts to daily instruction by specialists in other districts. Physical education is not like other content areas that consistently receive daily instruction. In addition, only 1 year of PE is required at the high school level. This can occur at any time during a student's high school career. He essentially was making the point that we wish to bring to bear, which is districts are all over the board with regards to what they're doing in physical education. And then the last comment I would just make on Chairman Sinceri and members of the committee, again, I made in my first, during my first testimony, I made the point of tried to make the point with regards to an acid prevention is worth a pound of cure. You know, there is absolutely, there's been no disagreement from any of the opponents in the 3 years we've been debating this issue before the various committees about our contentions and the data that we're providing with regards to the state of fitness level of students and the lack, their lack of activity level. Nobody said, no, you're wrong about that. What they said is, we really think that the current regs are requiring districts to provide the kind of quality experience that we need to be providing.
Actually, we've covered that ground, right. So, and I don't mean to interrupt you, but let me do this. What I want to do is I think I'll, you know, it's supposed to be our last day with House bills, but I'm going to set this over to Wednesday, and I'm going to ask if Representative Morissette would lead a work group. And the four of you, Green, you'd be involved in it as well, and COSA.
and see if we can get somewhere on some amendments to make this work. I think it's, I don't want to let us slip past this without addressing it, but there's a big money issue here that we have to be realistic about, and there's a physical education thing that I think is serious. So we'll just do that, and then Mr. Fox will kind of coordinate that so you can all, and Representative Morsat will lead the work group. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman.
We're going to close the work session on House Bill 3307 and do a work session on House Bill 2829. Representative Close.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for letting us have another hearing. I'm Betsy Close, State Representative in District 36, and you have my testimony previously, so I will not go over that again. I'm presenting to you the Dash 2 amendments. You may remember in the last hearing, it was brought up that we wanted this, that it would be good if this complied with the federal law as well, so that that deduction that's allowed at the federal level can be taken. So that's what we've done in the Dash 2s. They're divided into two parts, elementary and secondary, and then the second part is the state tuition program, it's called, which includes the higher ed. Just briefly to go through the Dash 2s, Section 2 is the definition. Section 3 sets up the accounts for these family education accounts. Section 4 describes the trustee that keeps the account. Section 5 talks about the deposit to the account, and there's a blank left on the amount. We had asked for $2,500 a year. Section 6 is the withdrawal penalties decisions. Section 7 talks about subtracting from federal income. The second part is the is called the qualified state tuition. Deals with the higher ed part. Section 11 is the definition. Section 12 is the policy. Sections 13 through 15 talk about the board that will oversee this, a board of five. It's called the Qualified Tuition Savings Board. Section 16 deals with the contributions to that and the accounting and the records. Section 17 says that the board directs this, the investment, any investments that are made from this. And Section 18 through 21 deal with refunds. So I'd be happy to take questions.
Okay. And Representative Jensen, if you are listening in your earphones, we would like to have you return to the committee. Questions from the committee? He's got an earphone for this. My committee is falling apart here. No questions.
Thank you.
Are you okay with this? Pardon?
I'd rather be here.
And we'll do is we'll just stand the committee down for just a few minutes. Representative Jensen have our opportunity to return. And what do we got?
Then they're done then.
Okay. We'll reconvene. No, we're going to reconvene right now.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Great. Tell Elaine that we're going to. I want to vote on this before we.
Chair, is there a revenue impact on this?
No, actually, it says minimal fiscal impact.
Do we have to send this to revenue, Mr. Chair?
I don't think so. We don't have. She's not coming back. She'll be right. Hobson coming back. If she could just step back so we could vote. We could take a break for a minute. We only have actually one or two more to go. So. Okay.
Okay, we're in a work session on House Bill 2829. Representative Close, you move the dash two amendments?
Yes, sir. I move dash two amendments into House Bill 2829.
Representative Close moves the dash two amendments into House Bill 2829. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Dash twos are adopted. Representative Close?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2829 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Close will move House Bill 2829 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Representative Hobson?
I'd just like to be on record being opposed to this. I will vote in opposition to it because of the tax credit and private school implications.
Okay. Objection is noted. Clerk will call the roll.
Representative Beck is excused. Representative Close?
Aye.
Representative Hoffman?
No.
Representative Jensen?
Excused.
Representative Knoll?
Aye.
Representative Morissette?
Excused.
Representative Starr?
Aye.
Representative Wilson?
Aye.
Representative Winters?
Aye. Representative Winters will die.
Chairman Terry.
Well, it's aye. Motion is passed. Representative Close will carry the bill. We will go into a work session on House Bill 2670. Close work session on House Bill 2629 and go into a work session on House Bill 2670. We had a couple of hearings on this, I believe, and Mr. Fox, if you just give us an update, please. 2670
directs the county treasurer to distribute money directly to school districts rather than through educational service districts. This would be based on a per student formula. It would grant each school district within an ESD the same share of ESD tax revenue as the share of total weighted students from the prior year. Provides that certain facilities and services may be provided to school districts through avenues other than the ESD, and that the ESD may provide them only pursuant to a contract. Requires the largest school district in the county to provide services and facilities at a reasonable cost if requested by smaller districts that cannot provide the services and facilities for themselves.
Can we have dash one amendments to this bill only, or is there dash two?
I believe only dash ones.
Okay, and for the committee, this bill is to be moved to the Revenue Committee?
We're just going to move it to
the Revenue.
You may not have the dash ones in your packets. I'm sorry. They came to you some time ago, so they may be in your bill pile. The dash one amendment simply deletes on page 4, line 6, the words within a county and inserts in the education service district within which the school districts are located. So instead of within a certain county, it's within a certain ESD area.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Starr.
Are we in work session?
We are.
Mr. Chair, I'd move House Bill 2670. No, I guess that's the amend. I'd move dash one amendments to House Bill 2670.
Representative Starr moves the dash ones into House Bill 2670. Discussion? Is there objection?
Mr. Chair.
These ones are adopted. I'd stand by just 1 minute. Norm, would you get?
Move House Bill 2670, as amended to Revenue Committee without recommendation.
Representative Starr moves House Bill 2670 as amended by the committee to the Revenue Committee without recommendation. Discussion? Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will speak vehemently against this bill. I think the ESDs serve a wonderful purpose. They may not for one or two areas about which I'm unaware, but by far the majority are very well done, and the changes that need to be made within the ESDs. This may work real well for the urban districts, particularly those along the I-5, but those of us in the rural areas are very dependent upon our ESDs, and this whole concept, I've tried to find out from whence the idea came and who's really upset with ESDs, and quite honestly, I have much more information about people who are saying, please don't do this. So I'm very much against this. I think it's ill-conceived, and I, as hard as I tried, I could not find the basis for it.
Further discussion? Representative Phelps.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I just want to note for the record that I believe when this came up last time, it was a courtesy vote on this. If the funding disparity is not fixed and this does reappear from revenue, I will likely be a no vote on the floor. However, I will provide a courtesy vote to move it to revenue.
Representative Ware.
Representative Knope. And if it comes back from revenue, I will probably vote on the floor.
Okay. And Mr. Chair, if I just comment, that's one of the reasons why I did without recommendation, because of the concern on this committee.
And I'll inform Representative Montgomery whose bill this is. Clerk, call the roll.
Representative
Hopkins? Aye. Representative Thompson? No. Representative Jensen? Representative Knope? Aye. Representative Warfett? No. Representative Starr?
Aye.
Representative
Wilson? Aye.
Representative
Winters?
Aye.
Chairperson
Sears? Well, it's aye. Motion is passed to the Revenue Committee. Let's see. We're going to carry this over.
Let me go back and do this.
Yeah. We're going to...
Mr.
Yes.
I'd like to report that our group will meet Monday evening at 5 o'clock in the conference room on third floor, and they have prepared an agenda.
Already.
And I will use my great big gavel to chair that meeting.
Okay. Thank you. I think we can just open the work session and redo that.
We can just really reopen the work session and we need to
reconsider the rules.
Maybe suspend the rules.
Yeah. I think we just about got one. Done a marvelous job. We worked 18 bills this afternoon. And we have one small discrepancy. And then suspend the rules. Okay, we're going to close the work session on House Bill 2670, and we're going to reopen the work session on House Bill 2829. We need to suspend the rules to reconsider the vote by which we passed this. This bill has a subsequent referral to revenue as well, and so we need to just refer it to revenue. So, Representative Starr, do you move that we suspend the rules to reconsider the vote by which we passed House Bill 2829?
So moved.
Okay. Rules are suspended.
We need 7 votes for it to hear if there's any objection.
Right, we'll do that. Okay, objection to or discussion on suspending the rules. Pardon?
You're right.
I'm right. Okay. Discussion on suspension of the rules. Is there objection to suspending the rules? Okay. Now we need to reconsider the vote by which we passed House Bill 2829. Is there discussion? Is there objection?
Who made that motion? And don't we have... Well, you did.
Now, Representative Close, would you like to move the bill to the Revenue Committee?
Yes, sir. Mr. Chair, I move that we move House Bill 2829 as amended to the Revenue Committee with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Close moves House Bill 2829 as amended to the Revenue Committee with a due pass recommendation. discussion.
Mr. Chair, it makes a whole lot of sense. It's a little scary sending the bill to the floor with a blank in it.
Okay. Further discussion. Clerk will call the roll.
Representative Beck, excuse. Representative Close.
Aye.
Representative Austin.
No.
Representative Jensen. Excuse. Representative Cano.
Aye.
Representative Morissette.
No.
Representative Starr.
Aye.
Representative Wilson.
Aye.
Representative Winters.
Aye.
Representative Harris.
Votes aye. Motion is adopted, and we'll send this bill to Revenue Committee. Close the session on House Bill 2829, and I will direct the administrator to put House Bill 2539 over to Wednesday. We should have the amendments by then. And I think that's it. No, that's 33. Okay, committee's adjourned. All right. I'll move. 2 more, 7.